Welcome back into The Drive. My name is Carrington Harrison. Very happy to be here. Coming up at the top of the 4 o'clock hour, we are going to be joined by Mark Sharp. He is a state representative for Missouri. Yesterday, we had a Kansas rep on the show. Today, we will get the Missouri side of the stadium pursuit. Let's head to the phone lines right now. Speaking of the Royals, to be joined by our Royals insider, Josh Vernier. Vern, how you doing, my man?
I'm doing very well. How are you?
I'm doing great. Vern, did you get one of those replica 2015 rings? I got one. I was actually surprised at the quality. It's a very sturdy replica.
I would say for the last, and maybe it aligns with, it's going to sound like I'm kissing up. Maybe it aligns with John Sherman taking over, but, you know, they partnered with Charlie Hustle, right, for all the t-shirt giveaways. The quality of most of their stuff nowadays, even the, I forgot how you describe the hats, but the hats with the little flaps that come down over the ears, even those, high quality, man. It pays to show up to Kauffman Stadium.
It absolutely does. Let's talk about this weekend, and then we'll transition to talking about Jack, and then we'll talk about the team and the series against the Giants. What was it like to be in the middle of this weekend? I got a chance to go out there Saturday and Sunday, and more specifically on Saturday. It was just really cool to see so many of the players on the field together, and the way that they did the highlights, where they were just taking you through the season and you were just reliving so many moments and memories, things that you forgot about, players that you had forgotten, hadn't seen in a long time. I thought it was really well done. You had a front row seat to everything that happened this weekend. What was it like?
Yeah, it was very enjoyable. It doesn't feel like 10 years, so to me, it wasn't the trip down memory lane that it may have been for others that have a more exciting life. But for me, when it's Royals baseball year in and year out, no, that 2015 team is mentioned on basically every single postgame show for the last decade. So, you know, it's nice to see them together because it reminds you of one of the reasons why you love that team. Now, the reason why you loved 15 is because they won, of course, but you also loved them because you had been watching them for nearly half a decade. A lot of them, right? You knew the inside jokes. You knew the relationships. You know who were the best friends, even though they all appeared to be friends. And, you know, all those things were on display, even though 10 years have gone by. Like we all know, if you get together with your high school buddies, your college buddies, it doesn't take long until you're right back in those familiar roles. And it was clear, even as a fan, as a media member, it was clear that everybody locked back into those familiar roles that they played back in 2015.
I had never thought this until this weekend, and you can tell me if I'm off on this. I came away this weekend thinking Moose might actually be the most popular one in this group. It was different whenever Moose spoke, whenever they showed Moose highlights. Maybe it's because he has a call that Hosmer doesn't have, or Salvi, or Gordon doesn't have. But just, it is funny to think about how this run started and the feeling about Mike Moustakas. Like, there was a time that he was MJ Melendez, for now him to have a retirement ceremony coming up in 2 weeks, for him to be one of the more celebrated players from that era. You want to talk about coming full circle, he might completely embody that.
Yeah. I don't know if he's the favorite because, again, and we've talked about this, that's another aspect of that ball club that was so much fun, is there wasn't the Bobby Witt Jr. Everyone had a favorite Royal, from a starter to even bench players to bullpen guys to starting pitchers. Everyone had a small fan base. I mean, even Terrence Gore, you heard the ovation he got on Saturday. That team was beloved and always will be. But yeah, I mean, the story, when you win a title, is always the title. You know, you don't talk about Mike Moustakas hitting 211 in 2014. You don't talk about how the contract turned out for Alex Gordon, or how the career ended for Eric Hosmer, or the health concerns early in Lorenzo Cain's career. No, you just remember they're champions, soon to be Royals Hall of Famers, and forever legends in Kansas City.
It was really cool to see the interaction between the 85 team and the 15 team, and the fact that so many of them are still around. And even on the 15 team, there are still like fingerprints on them. George Brett played a very instrumental role in 15 and the success. Willie Wilson was still around. So many of those great players. What was really cool with the Thursday event that they had down at Union Station was seeing the relationship between the 85 and 15 teams.
to me, watching the 85 team on Friday just made me feel old in that, you know, when I look at the 2015 guys, I view them the same way that my nephew views the 2025 team, the same way that our uncles viewed the 1985 team, right? The boys of summer, the guys that lay it all out there on the line, you know, having the time of their lives. You know, you watch those highlight packages, and not only do you remember the great moments, but you see the smiles and the celebrations and the post-game celebrations and the, you know, trials and tribulations that those 25, 26 guys go through together. And it's always the same. You know, every championship team, even teams that fall short, they all go through that. They all think it's never going to end. It's all the pinnacle of their professional lives, and it's over in a blink. And suddenly it's 40 years later, and a few of you are getting wheeled out, and you're all bald, and, well, except for George, but the rest of them are all bald. And it just puts into perspective, you know, with your grandfather and your father and yourself and your sons and your daughters, it's, baseball is life, man, and it, for as much as we want to think we're going to be around and it's going to be around forever, it's all gone in the blink of an eye.
I think one thing that watching that highlight video showed me, and we've talked about it before, but it just came up as I was watching it, is, man, those two teams just have so many what ifs. Like, there was so many times in that story where the story just could have abruptly ended. Like, I'm sitting there at the wild card game. I never thought I would get a chance to go to a Royals postseason game. So much hope, so much excitement. And then that deflating feeling of a big home run being, and just like, oh, well, I guess it's over. And then little by little, the Royals start to come back. They highlighted the Carlos Correa error. And the Royals, who had just run through the season, wait, they're down four heading into the eighth inning. The story can't end this way. I think kind of going down this trip down memory lane, I think I just kind of realized, man, there were so many opportunities for this story to not end the way that I wanted it to. And just everything that could go right for the Royals basically did for like 18 months.
Yeah, same in 1985, right? They're down 3-1 to the Jays in the ALCS, and George goes crazy. They're down 3-1 to the Cardinals in the World Series, and Jack Clark doesn't catch a foul ball, and there's a wild pitch, and then, of course, the missed call at first base. And, yeah, so many instances to where they don't make it to the World Series in 85. They don't win the World Series in 85, and could you imagine you know, George's legacy, what this franchise, if this franchise would still be in Kansas City, if not for that 85 team. No, and that's a perfect example of why, when it's May 20th and your baseball team has, what, the second most wins in the American League, sure, we could nitpick, we can point out certain aspects that we hope improve over the course of the final 113 games. But it's a pretty good spot to be in where we're at right now in 25.
Right now, we're talking to our Royals insider, Josh Vernier, here. We just recapped this celebration this past weekend between the 1985 and the 2015 team. A great celebration out at Kauffman. I also thought the crowd was very much into it. Even though there were a lot of Cardinals fans on Saturday, that's certainly a fan base that understands history, appreciates history, and I thought they were into it, and it was just fun to see Kauffman Stadium so fired up on Saturday. I know the game didn't live up to it, but it was a great crowd, and I'm not really sure if you can be upset by the turnout that we saw this past weekend at Kauffman.
No, very happy, and it's always very picturesque, even though I know the Cardinals are detestable and all of that, but the red, white, and blue at Kauffman Stadium, it was a very nice weekend aesthetically, but yeah, on the diamond, you were hoping that would have been a little bit more successful.
Let's talk about Jack Caglione here. He got called up to AAA Omaha. What's your biggest takeaway? What was your impression when you saw the tweet that the Royals had made the decision to move him up?
I thought of Ned Yost, right? Because it was a week ago that I was on with Fesco and Dusty, and I thought, yeah, it appeared to me, and again, I'm not watching every pitch, I'm not diving into double-A baseball, I'm looking at the box scores, I'm watching recaps, but it's nothing all that's, you know, strenuous. But it appeared to me that the challenge was no longer there for Jack, and I, you know, think of Dayton Moore always talking about you can only grow as your competition grows, but then I thought of Ned Yost. He always says, or said, You know, whenever I'm thinking about making a move, I wait a week and then possibly make that move. And that's exactly what the front office did. Maybe it was apparent that Jack was ready a week ago, but JJ and many of the front office make that trip down there. They get their eyes on Jack, and they confirm what they were reading in the reports, and Jack gets the bump up to AAA. Again, this is what we talked about back in spring training. So far, it's been best-case scenario with Jack Caglione. Go to AA, dominate, and get bumped up to AAA before the calendar flips to June. He's done it. Now, next up is go dominate AAA, ideally for a couple of months, and then join a team that is red hot, an offense that is consistent, and a team that is steamrolling towards October. So two more steps to go, but so far, everything you could have hoped for the 22-year-old has come to fruition.
I thought the Royals were going to slow play this a little bit. Are you surprised by how quickly this is moving? I mean, we're talking about a player who played less than 2 months in AA. Now, I certainly understand their logic. He was incredible down in AA. He hit .322. He had almost a .400 on base percentage. He led in RBIs. So I certainly get why they are doing this. I'm just surprised for an organization that usually kind of slow plays these things. That doesn't seem like that's the case here with this prospect.
Well, I do think it's a different game, and of course, the organization that you're referring to, yes, had J.J. Piccolo in it, but that, you know, that was more of the, right, Dayton Moore is the one that held back Bobby Witt Jr. You could make a case that Bobby could have been in the big leagues a year before. I know Dayton struggled with that decision of whether or not to have Bobby take all of those steps and go through the normal minor league progression. No, I'm not surprised. And once you saw Jack start to moonlight in the outfield, five starts in right, he's made a start in left field as well. Once you saw that, you knew that the Royals are thinking about 2025 with Caglione. That's what I'm most interested in when the lineup comes out in a few hours and how they handle him for the first few weeks. Is it predominantly in the outfield? Because Jack Caglione playing first base at AAA, being that close to the big leagues, him playing first base really doesn't do all that much for the big league club. To me, he's a right fielder. He's a left fielder. He's a guy that's knocking on the door and looking, should have Hunter Renfroe looking over his shoulder.
Yeah, I mean, at this point, to me, I'm 100% with you. If you're going to do this move, and we're talking about Jack Caglione joining this team, let's just pick August 1st as a random date, you got to be thinking about where he can potentially play. And offensively, if he continues to do in Omaha what he was doing in Northwest Arkansas, then you're going to have to make room for him. The only place that makes sense to me is one of those corner outfielders. What I want this team to do is, if you were telling me that the plan is around July 31st is, they go make a move for a bat and they bring up Jack Caglione, that's a really good improvement for this offense. And hopefully you are heading in the right direction with this offense.
Yeah, and ideally, when Cags gets that call, it's not an offense that is desperate for that trade acquisition and the emergence of Caglione. Ideally, he debuts hitting in the seventh spot and eventually climbs his way up, you know, up to the five spot, the four spot, depending on who you bring in. And I heard you talk to Denny about it yesterday, you know, you cannot ask a 35-year-old catcher to be your cleanup hitter if you're going to win the division, not in the second half of the season. You know, Salvi's going to be able to turn it around, I believe, offensively. But come those brutal summer days of July, August, and September, if you're going to have him behind the dish, you can't ask him to be who he was last year, who he's been for half a decade now. You have to expect some decline offensively if you're going to put him behind the dish. And again, that's another reason why really no reason for Caglione to be playing first base all that often. Now, occasionally, fine, but nightly, no, because Salvi's a first baseman at DH in the second half of the season. Vinny's a first baseman DH in the second half of the season. You don't need another one.
We got breaking news right now in the NFL. NFL owners have approved for NFL players to participate in flag football in the upcoming Olympics in 2028. NFL players have been allowed to play in the Olympics. We'll figure out more of the information. The Olympics in 2028 will be from July 14th through July 30th in Los Angeles. NFL owners have approved it. I'm sure there are some provisions. Once we find those out, we'll certainly share them with you. Patrick Mahomes has actually expressed that he would be interested in playing in flag football in the Olympics. We'll talk about that more once we get done with Vern. Vern, let's get back to the Royals here. It sounds like you're not worried about Salvador Perez.
Not more concerned than what I just said, right? I don't think you can ask him to drive the bus like you'll need a cleanup hitter to drive the bus to win a division. I don't think you can ask that of him when the calendar gets to July, when we get to the second half of the season. I mean, I could dive into some of the advanced metrics or the expected numbers. You look at the expected batting average and on-base percentage and the expected slugging percentage for Salvi. He's run into a lot of tough luck this season. I know nobody likes to hear that. They roll their eyes at it. But Salvi's track record coupled with those numbers that say his exit velo, his barrels, should equate to much better numbers. And I'm talking a lot better, right? He's hitting 218. He has an expected batting average of 290. He has an OPS of 578, an expected OPS of 866. So that coupled with him being a future Hall of Famer, if anybody's going to turn it around, I believe in the captain.
The only thing I would say, and this is me pushing back a little bit because you heard what I said yesterday, if Denny says that he's going to give it until June 20th, I will give it until June 20th. Usually, I would say that fans are the last ones to acknowledge when a player is declining. Like, the decline, it appears, if we're just looking at the raw numbers, is happening right before our eyes, and we all love Salvi. We all feel the same way about him. But, I mean, it is a noticeable decline from where he was last season and where he's been these last handful of years. And I think you and I agree on this. Yes, Hunter Renfro is a problem. Yes, MJ Melendez was a problem. One of the problems with the Royals offense is they were counting on getting a productive version of Salvador Perez, and that just really hasn't happened so far this season.
Well, it hasn't happened in May, right? He's hitting below 200 since the calendar flipped to May. In the second half of April, though, you know, his numbers were well above league average. So, you know, we're not even 50 games into the season. He's had a decent start, a good stretch, and now a bad stretch. And again, those advanced numbers would tell you that things are going to turn around for Salvi. So, eventually it's going to end. I don't believe it's right now, but who knows? Like you're saying, eventually, sure. It certainly will end, but there's just too many reasons for patience with Salvi, both tangible and intangible.
Right now, we're talking to our Royals insider, Josh Vern. You're joining us on the show. Vern, is there a chance that Chris Bubich makes the All-Star team?
Yeah, no doubt. I would say right now, Bobby Bubich and Lucas Urseg would be my three selections. Michael Wacha has a really good case, but I'll go with those three. I'll say right now it's Bubich, Bobby, and Lucas Urseg.
I left Saturday really, really impressed with Noah Cameron. Just, I could easily see how a young player in the middle of all of that, you're from St. Joe, you're making a start at Kauffman, packed house, the Cardinals are in town. Like, I could see how the moment could take over there. Noah Cameron looked like a guy that's been doing this for 8-9 years. He's not really a prospect that we spent a lot of time talking about over the last couple of years, but I find it hard to believe that the Royals got a lot better prospects in their minor league system than what we've seen from Cameron in his first two starts.
Well, at 25, you're not, well, to have that little of big league experience, the scenario that you paint and you can throw on top of it, you're throwing to Salvi and you're pitching in front of a 2015 Royals club that you, as a 16-year-old, cheered on and fell in love with. Yeah, it's got to be overwhelming. But the thing that stuck out to me this spring about Noah Cameron, and talked about it on those Hot Stove shows, was how composed he was, how professional he was, both in demeanor and also eye test-wise. The command to throw four or five different pitches to all four quadrants, very Chris Bubich-like in the way that he can keep hitters off balance with stuff that isn't necessarily overpowering. And then just the eye test. I mean, he's got a man's body out there. Now he's 25. I'm not going to act like he's a kid. But for a rookie, two starts into a season, yeah, you can certainly dream on a lefty with command like that, 6 years of control to go along with Chris Bubich and Cole Reagans and some other very nice pieces that are down on the farm right now. You feel good about this organization top to bottom. Not only at the big league level do you have a team with 27 wins, again, the second most in the junior circuit, but you have a top 10 prospect that is always being promoted by the league, right? You see it on social media. Major League Baseball loves Jack Caglione. They cannot wait for this dude to get to the show. He is going to be everywhere. That coupled with a pitching department that now it appears can draft and develop, this is how you win consistently in a market like this. Kudos to the front office. Kudos to ownership.
Have you ever been to San Francisco Stadium?
Yeah, for the 2014 World Series.
Yep. Oh, yeah. Okay, my bad. No, that was a silly question now in hindsight. No, it was a long time ago. I got a chance to go out there last year. One of my really good friends lives in San Francisco. I got a chance to see the stadium. Absolutely beautiful stadium. I mean, one of the cool things about baseball, it's very obvious, but just how unique every stadium is and how the experience in every stadium is just totally different. But like to walk back there, see McCovey Cove, know that Barry Bonds used to hit home runs here, a really, really cool park.
And you don't have to go into the ballpark to take pictures with that Willie Mays statue, who was my favorite player, always will be my favorite player. That was my main attraction when I went out there, was to see the Say Hey Kid. But again, that was 11 years ago. I know San Francisco is a lot different than it was 11 years ago, because back when I'm going out there, the Warriors were just starting. I would imagine that basketball team has certainly changed the landscape of the downtown.
Yeah, and they also are in a new stadium since the last time you were down there, too. It's in downtown San Francisco. Last question, I'll get you out of here, Vern. Norm from Cheers has just recently passed away. RIP to him. You and I are around the same age, that we didn't grow up with the 80s shows the way that we did with the 90s shows, but there was definitely an 80s show that you liked. Like, I like Golden Girls. I can't really explain what it was, but you know how it is. You would just watch the news, and then after the news, there would just be this 80s show. You just end up watching like, oh, this show's kind of funny. What was your 80s show?
Yeah, Golden Girls is good. Cheers, I'm glad you didn't have a question, because I never truly dove in on that. Is the Cosby Show a cop-out? Because does that count as an 80s show?
Yeah, definitely,
right?
100%.
Yeah, well, then the Cosby Show would be my answer.
Is it still just the answer with everything now? Like, I feel like now you've got to completely move away from everything Cosby.
No, I mean, yeah, he's a scumbag, obviously, and it broke everybody's heart, and you feel horrible for the victims. But no, that was the show, man. Yeah, of course, that's what I was watching. He was Cliff Huxtable. Who didn't love that show? Get real.
You want me to ask you a question about the stadium, or you just want to end our interview?
I don't know anything. I don't follow it.
That is our guy.
You're doing a great job, though. I know that.
No, that is our guy, John. I just had to ask you. Like, maybe you're like, man, I got thoughts. Nobody ever asked me about the stadium. I just want to give you the chance.
Just tell me where to go. That's all I know.
That is our guy, Josh Vern. You're joining us on the show. Thanks, Vern. I appreciate
you. All right, buddy. Thank you.
That is our guy, Josh Vern. You're joining us on the show. Happy to talk a little Royals baseball with him. If you missed it, the NFL has approved players to participate in flag football in the 2028 Los Angeles Olympics. The summer games would be from July 14th through the 30th in 2028, so we still got a couple of years. They are coming up with the rules. It looks like only one player per team would be able to play in this. So you can't have three or four guys, only one player from each team. Patrick Mahomes in the past has suggested that he would be open to playing flag football. We'll talk about it coming up on the other side. Keep it right here. It's The Drive.
Hey, it's Lucas Ersig from the Kansas City Royals. You're listening to The Drive with CDOT on 96.5 The Fan.
Brought to you by DM Entry Law. Have you or a loved one been in a car wreck? Contact DM Entry Law today and get the money you deserve. Car wreck? Remember, Mike's got this.
All right, let's talk about this breaking news story. The National Football League has approved for their players to participate in the upcoming Olympics. We have a Summer Olympics coming up in 3 years, 2028. The Summer Olympics is in the United States. It will be held in Los Angeles. It will be between the 14th and the 30th. Now, we don't know when the flag football portion will happen. There is a chance that this happens directly before training camp, so no player will miss any time. This could happen a little bit later in the Olympic cycle, and some players would miss a very small portion of training camp. So I want to play this for you because Patrick Mahomes, in years past, has expressed he would be interested in playing in the Olympics. Here's what he had to say.
Oh, I definitely want to, but I've seen some of those guys play the flag football, and they're a little faster than I am. I know there's not like a lot of linemen blocking for you, so I'll be 31, 32 years old. So if I can still move around, then I'm gonna try to get out there and throw the football around. Maybe in LA, just don't tell Coach Reed or Veach or anybody.
So that is Patrick Mahomes. He said he was very, very interested. Now, I know this is going to sound hypocritical, and maybe this is me talking out of both sides of my mouth. I maintain that I don't think that NFL players should be allowed to play in this. I think it goes against the real spirit of what the Olympics are. The Olympics are seeing the best countries, the best athletes in the world go up against one another. Football is not an international game. Basketball is, baseball is, volleyball, soccer, golf. These are sports that people play around the world. There are not enough other countries that participate in football the way that we do to make this truly entertaining. Yes, from a financial standpoint, I'm sure the NFL is thinking, well, I mean, this is going to happen during your free time. I mean, sure, if you want to go out there, it can only help us. And it sounds like one of the provisions is going to be, well, if a player gets hurt during the Olympics, we want a salary cap exemption. So let's say that Justin Jefferson goes out there and tears his ACL in the Olympics. Then his contract simply won't count against the books for this year. So for the owners, sure, you don't have the player, but it's kind of hard to really find other negatives from the owners. I mean, it only increases their visibility of their sport to have these players go out there. So I see why it was unanimously approved today to have the players go out there. So on one side, I understand that this next opinion is going to sound hypocritical and that I don't think they should go over there. I think it violates the spirit of the Olympics. I find it to be pointless for the most part. I would be fine if Patrick Mahomes wants to play. If Patrick Mahomes decides that he wants to go to the Olympics and he wants to be the Chiefs representative for the Olympics, go let him play. I mean, he's the quarterback. I'm just going to guess. I could be wrong. I haven't watched a whole lot of flag football games in my life. I'm assuming that the quarterback isn't going to be doing a whole lot of running in this thing. I'm assuming that it's going to be a one Mississippi, two Mississippi. If you don't get the ball out of your hand by five, you are technically down. So why would I be against Patrick Mahomes going to Los Angeles and throwing to the best wide receivers in the world? That doesn't sound like a bad way to spend time. Of all the players who could possibly get hurt, I'm guessing the quarterback will be the least likely of all of those possibilities. So if this is Trent McDuffie, we need to have a conversation about it. If this was another player, Rashee Rice, somebody like that, Xavier Worthy, yes, I'd be open to having those conversations, and I think there would be real pushback on if this is smart to let you go do. I don't really see many negatives in letting your quarterback go out there and do it. Your quarterback's not in any danger in your practices. I'm guessing that if the NFL is now going to be involved in the planning of the flag football, they're going to ensure that the quarterbacks are the ones that get protected the most. Hey, our quarterback is not running. If Josh Allen is going to do this, or Joe Burrow, or Arch Manning, or whomever the quarterback is going to be, it's going to be very simple. We're not letting your players run around and chase him. No, he's going to stand there in the pocket, And after 6 seconds, if he doesn't throw the ball, then he's down and we'll take the penalty or however you come up with the rules. So I just don't think Mahomes is in any danger. I don't think that there's any possibility that he could get hurt really in this. So yeah, sure, go out there. If you want to go out there and play catch to guys that are going to be wide open, you get a gold medal, you get to hang out in LA before you come to work for us. I don't have any problem with Mahomes going out there.
First of all, I don't think they're going to change the rules for the quarterback, but even in flag football, the clips I've seen and what Mahomes said in the clip we played earlier, there's a little bit of running around, but it's not like they're running option football. I mean, it's more like evading some people to throw. I don't think it's like what Josh Allen and Lamar Jackson does. I also think I saw this from Jordan Schultz. It has been a priority for Roger Goodell to get flag football in the Olympics and then get NFL players in it to expand the international brand of the NFL. It sounds like Patrick Mahomes is going to end up being one of the people. If you're Roger Goodell and you've been working behind the scenes to make this happen, you're going to not have one of your most marketable players, if not the most marketable player, play in this when he has already expressed interest. So at this point, I feel like it's going to happen, Mahomes, unless he changes his tune. So maybe they will adjust the rules or whatever, but it feels like a foregone conclusion to me. Mahomes has said this. Goodell is working on this because of marketability. Those things go hand in hand. It feels like Mahomes is going to be in the Olympics. That just feels like a foregone conclusion to me.
Yeah, I just also feel like this, and maybe this is, hey, that's not what it's supposed to be. I kind of like the fact in the Olympics that they had 5-on-5 basketball for the professionals. These are for the best basketball players in the world. It didn't matter if you're from Serbia, didn't matter if you're from Greece or Canada or the United States. Very, very simple, right? Like, very, very simple. So I like the fact that the NBA players participate. I wish that they allowed baseball players to participate. I wish that once every 4 years, baseball took a small break and allowed all of its superstars to participate in the Olympics. I think it would be great. But the reason I feel that way is other countries play baseball and are actually really good at it. Puerto Rico's really good. Japan, really good. There's other countries that are really, really good. Cuba, really, really good at baseball. It's like a real challenge. That's not what we're talking about here. We're talking about what at this point is, let's be honest, it is an amateur sport. And I'm not saying that to knock flag football. If you get really good at flag football, there is a much higher version of it that you should probably go out and play if you are that good at it, where they tackle you, where there's real danger. So I just don't like the fact that we have now allowed the millionaire football players to come in and take jobs from these amateurs. I don't like it. I just don't think that's what the spirit of the Olympics are. Are we that hard up to get another gold medal in this thing that now we're willing to sit there and watch the United States play Serbia in flag football? Who's their quarterback? Who are they going up against? This just doesn't seem to be in the spirit of true competition. And I think the NFL already does enough with its international mission. This just feels unnecessary to me. You are bending over backwards for the international mission. They have 7 games this year. You give them real games. You give them divisional games. They get the Cowboys and the Packers and the Steelers. Like, you have given a lot to international mission. A big reason of why you put the games on Netflix is that they're available across the world. It's not like the rest of the world doesn't have access to the NFL. In fact, they have almost the same access to the NFL that we do on television. So now doing this where you're going to see the United States just roll over all these other countries, I just don't know if it's going to have, I don't know if it's going to have the movement in football the way that it has with other sports. Basketball, we have seen grow exponentially. I mean, by the third time that the United States sent NBA players to the Olympics, they lost the gold medal. It is not a guarantee that if the United States sent all of its best American players to the Olympics, it's not a sure thing that they are going to win the gold medal. There are other countries that could seriously compete and could beat the United States in competition. There's no country out there that I think can compete with the United States in flag football if we're sending our best football players over there. So a lot of this just feels very unnecessary to me. But the NFL, they unanimously approve this. It's hard to get all of them on the same page. They got 32 owners unanimously to say yes, we want to do this. And the players obviously have expressed some interest in wanting to do it. I get why the players would want to do it. Hey, this is in the offseason. It's in Los Angeles. It'll be good for my personal brand. I get a chance to win a gold medal. I get a chance to hang out with world-class athletes from around the world. Like, I get why you as an athlete would want to participate in the Olympics. But I would just say, Patrick, you get enough opportunities to do a lot of cool things. Why are we now taking this from the accountant on the flag football team? He doesn't get these opportunities to do cool things. That's what it could have been. So I do hope that they have a professional version of it and an amateur version of it. Like, hey, if you played in the NFL, you are ineligible for this version. So let's get the United States, all of these other countries, and let's see a fair representation of flag football. I just think this is just bullying on the rest of the world and something that they have just openly said, we don't participate in. Why don't you do that to them in baseball or something else that they do? Well, you got to pick on them in football. Just doesn't feel right to me. Coming up at the top of the hour, we're going to be joined by a Missouri State rep. Keep it right here. It's The Drive.
You're listening to The Drive with Carrington Harrison.
For the first time in a long time, I'm willing to dream that this can be a special season for the Missouri Tigers.
Brought to you by DM Injury Law. Have you or a loved one been in a car wreck? Contact DM Injury Law today and get the money you deserve. Car wreck? Remember, Mike's got this. 96.5 The Fan.
I want to tell you guys a dream that I currently have. I don't know if this counts as very much of a dream, but it's something that I would very much like to see. Did you guys watch the FX show American Crime Story? I mean, a couple of those American Crime Stories were actually really, really good. They had the one with the People versus O.J. Simpson that I really enjoyed. I've actually watched that multiple times. They had the one about Monica Lewinsky and the impeachment of Bill Clinton. They had one on Aaron Hernandez a couple of years ago. They had one on Versace. It's a really good series. I would encourage you to get on the Hulu app, and I would encourage you to check it out. Well, I want to make another suggestion for the people over there at FX. Now, right now, it is not a crime story, but who knows? Because a crime story could happen at some point. But you know what? I want to see an FX depiction of this relationship between Bill Belichick and Jordan Hudson. I am enthralled by this story. Now, maybe you don't care about this story, and I get it if you don't care about this story, but we are now getting reports that Bill Belichick is engaged to this woman. Now, I don't know if this is true or if it's not true. At this point, it is hard to decipher with these two individuals what's real and what's not real. But I'm just telling you what the internet streets are telling me. The internet streets are telling me that Bill Belichick is planning on marrying this woman. Whose idea do you think this was? Because normally, you know, the man, he puts on a nice suit. You know, you get down on one knee and you tell her how you want to spend the rest of your life with you. If I had to guess how this played itself out, I'm guessing that she proposed to him. Bill was just sitting there coaching, writing some stuff on the blackboard. And she was like, babe, can I talk to you about something? Yeah, honey, of course. Hey, you know, we've been dating now for about 5-6 months, and I know it's starting to get serious. You know, I really love you. I appreciate you. You know, right, babe, I appreciate you too. You know, you changed my life so much. I know, you know, you changed my life too. Why don't we get married? Really? You want to? Yes, tonight. I wouldn't be shocked if they are already married. In fact, a lot of the stories that we've heard about Bill Belichick would actually make more sense if he was already married to this woman. Now, I'm not telling you they're engaged or not engaged. I don't know. But the story is definitely better if that's the case. I mean, listen to this. So they were supposed to be, they meaning North Carolina, they were supposed to be on Hard Knocks. So they were supposed to, HBO was supposed to come out there and they were going to do a Hard Knocks on the North Carolina football team. And you remember, oddly enough, they pulled out of the deal and it didn't really make a lot of sense. Well, the New York Times is coming out and says that Jordan Hudson demanded she be granted content approval and partial ownership of the show, which is why ultimately HBO and NFL Films, who puts on Hard Knocks, why they declined and didn't move forward with the deal. Wait, you're telling me that this woman thought that she was going to come in and demand partial ownership of a show that's been going on now for almost 20 years? That's what she thought. She also thought that HBO and the NFL were going to run ideas by her to make sure that she liked them and approved them. This might be the boldest woman that we have ever discussed. This needs to be a television show. This needs to be an A24 movie at some point. The only question for me now is, who plays Bill Belichick in this movie? Rob, you watch a lot of movies. Tomorrow, if they tell you that you're going to be the showrunner for a Bill Belichick, Jordan Hudson movie, who are you signing up to play Bill Belichick? Because at this point, I want a movie so I can learn more about their relationship.
First off, the fact that she demanded ownership based on every story we've heard about her, it's actually not that surprising to me. After we got the story that she basically jammed her way into being the on the Ben Affleck Dunkin' Donuts commercial thing, she basically threw a tantrum and required her to be on that. I don't know who I'd want to play him. I know there was that Aaron Hernandez TV show that was terrible, by the way. It was really poorly done.
I kind of liked it in a very I don't know, odd way. I enjoyed it.
It was like just so poorly done. They had someone terrible playing Belichick, so I can rule whoever that was out. I don't know offhand. Do you have a name that you're like, oh, this is the guy? Because I would have told you, you know, before they made the OJ one, hey, OJ is going to be Cuba Gooding Jr. I would have said, huh? But it worked out perfectly on the television show. So I don't have an answer right now, but it definitely needs to be a television show. The way it's going, Jordan Hudson might make it a reality television show on Hulu before FX ever gets a chance to pick it up.
Text line 913-586-7965. A couple of people have suggested Nicolas Cage potentially play him in this.
Have you seen the photo of him as John Madden? He does look like he's going to do a good job on that film.
Somebody said Kevin Spacey would make a really good Bill Belichick. I actually think Kevin Spacey's a good suggestion. You know I love Kevin Spacey. Now, I know he's sick. I know that. But Kevin Spacey would do a great job as Bill Belichick. He would do a great job. Somebody said, what about Matthew McConaughey? I'm telling you, we need this show. We need an 8-10 episode FX depiction of Bill Belichick and Jordan Hudson. I'm serious. We need this. I never thought we would be here. I really didn't. I never thought we would be here, where we would be openly discussing the relationship of Bill Belichick. He seemed like the most private, I mean, close to the vest individual that we have ever seen, that we have ever discussed. And now he's in the news for his relationship almost every single day. I love it. I really do love it. Someone on the text line says, C-Dot, I'd rather you talk about the NBA than talk about this. I'm always down to talk about the NBA. Rob, we are starting the conference finals today. We're starting in the West, and then tomorrow is the Eastern Conference Finals between the Knicks and the Pacers. So the superstars on all four of these teams, no one has won a championship. Who do you want to see get their first ring? Is it Anthony Edwards or Shai Gilgeous-Alexander on the Western Conference side? Or is it Tyrese Halliburton or Jalen Brunson on the Eastern Conference side? Somebody gets their first championship. Who do you want it to be?
I want it to be SGA. I want SGA to be the first one through. A, because I have liked that. I have enjoyed watching that Thunder team play basketball all season. And he is the MVP and of the league this year. And obviously the best player on that team. He is incredible to watch. Just a little bit of everything. Also, I have no beef with Anthony Edwards, so he's not going to catch this. Tyrese Halliburton's beat the Cavs. No, you don't get to win. You don't get that moment. And you think I'm going to cheer for Jalen Brunson? Absolutely not. He already got his one title at my expense. No, thank you. So SGA is my answer.
I want to see what happens if the Knicks win the championship. I just want to see what happens. I will guess that we have never seen anything like it in a celebration of a team. It would be like if the Toronto Maple Leafs. It'd be like if the Toronto Maple Leafs won the Stanley Cup. That's what I want to see. I want to see what it looks like if the Knicks are the last team standing. I mean, Rob, you love superhero movies. How many times have you seen New York City get destroyed? You're going to see it in real life if the Knicks win the championship. We're talking about real endgame. Knicks endgame is what we're going to see if they end up winning the championship. I actually think it's going to be Knicks and Timberwolves in the NBA Finals. The New York Knicks going up against the Minnesota Timberwolves for the NBA championship. Doesn't that sound like a really, really good time? Sign me up. Coming up on the other side, we are going to be joined by the Missouri State Rep is going to join us on the show, Mark Sharp. We are going to get his thoughts on what is happening right now in the Missouri legislation because they cannot get this bill passed. We'll talk to him next. Keep it right here. It's The Drive.